You're listening to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. This is the show where we achieve peak performance at any age. And we know that the life best lived is indeed the athletic one. I'm John Zombro. I'm here as your host today, and it is indeed my honor, my privilege to also not only be with you guys listening, the audience, hey, thanks so much for being here, but also with the man, not a myth, a legend indeed, probably the most scintillating personality, most witty character, best mind and voice in podcast radio today, the mighty, mighty P, drum roll, please wait for it, K.
John Boy, I don't know what that was all about, but I will take it all. Too kind. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you're awesome. Love you, man, and thank you for being here. So today, episode number 136, folks, this is the fourth in our peak performance training series that have been paralleling the master classes at thelifetimeathlete.com that a lot of the participants or students have really been enjoying. And it's this topic, lifelong training, successfully navigating the lifespan as an athlete.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Pleasure to get into it.
I'd say this, achieving peak performance at any age is outstanding. It's an outstanding achievement or accomplishment, but maintaining that capacity in a relative manner through the journey called LIFE requires careful consideration and artful application. It comes down to two major things, finessing workload and recovery and leveraging your strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, it's kind of, those are topics that we get into regardless of what stage the athlete is on their journey in life. But it seems like those two components are even more important as we talk about peak performance at any age.
Indeed. And if I start off just by understanding workload just a bit. So when we're talking about training workload, we're always hoping to dance literally between what might be the minimum effective workload and the maximum absorbable workload, speaking of an individual training session, but you can also apply that out cumulatively in a volume manner throughout the year. So workload is intensity times duration in a training session. And then when we look, also at volume, that's essentially applying frequency to those workloads to kind of get that cumulative assessment of how much training and how challenging it is that one is doing.
Absolutely. Tracking.
So even in the healthiest person, no matter what you're doing, you know, you could be doing all the right things, the sleeping, the nutrition, the intelligent training, workload tolerance or the ability to handle that big dose declines slightly with age.
It's just a reality.
Yes, it is. And so I'm not speaking from a position of denial here. I would say that all of the things that we talk about here on the pod with you, my man, Podley Podlerson, they are very effective in minimizing the declination that can happen. So we can see other people that, they're having a train wreck experience with their performance because they're not doing a lot of the lifestyle support things that we emphasize here. But again, just to reiterate, you know, no matter how healthy we are, as we get older, our ability to handle the biggest workloads will come down a bit. And I'd also say this, while there is variance, generally, keeping intensity high in training, and again, that's relatively speaking, and where that's applicable in a workout, is the key. As we get older, we don't want to shy away from intensity, but instead, we probably want to look at decreasing duration slightly on some or most of our workouts. That's the key to bring that intensity times duration workload measure down into the tolerable level.
Got it.
So we need the intensity. We got to have it. We just can't absorb quite as much of it. You know, dose makes the poison, and it can become kryptonite if we're not careful. Mm-hmm. These changes begin to happen it varies again. You know, if again, a person has a great lifestyle, you might get out to 35 or so before the tiniest changes begin to occur. Can happen younger, but generally we'll notice with every decade, I think in this society, we tend to look at those as milestones. Anyway, we do these self-assessments. You're like, I can't quite put in or survive as much workload as I did in my blank in my teens or 20s or 30s or whatever you're going to say there.
Got it. Let's talk about some examples of what that might look like.
So let's say you're in a weight training or interval-based repetition session, a high-intensity training experience. Well, as you get older, you know, to you, you're going to go just as hard as you always have. And that's how it feels to you, not necessarily the output measure. But if you're doing 9 out of 10 in perceived effort in your 20s, you can still do that in your 50s. Again, the value of that might be slightly lower, should be, but you train, you know, you really want to try to train at those same percentages of RPE or max when it's applicable. We don't advocate doing that in every workout, but when you're doing a fitness maker workout on some interval in your training cycle, we want to actually make sure that we still capture the appropriate intensity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
So another way to look at it in a submax effort, you know, let's say you're doing a bike ride. You train really at that same, you know, effort level yet again, but those numbers might be a bit lower. So we're always just coming back to this thing of like, well, let's make sure we've got the effort or the intensity appropriately high enough to stimulate this response or adaptation that we're trying to get out of our bodies. And this is actually a very subtle adjustment. I mean, many athletes can get pretty much into their 60s before they start to see significant changes. There's quite a few examples of that out there, just in terms of how people are training and performing.
Interesting. So, I mean, you really are talking small, subtle changes to tune into, but I mean, that's still, being able to perform at a high level for a long time.
Yeah, and I think my coffee was still kicking in as I was just trying to describe that, because really the message is this, the big workouts, the fitness makers are still there, or they need to be in the lifetime athlete, and they still feel just as hard to us. They're probably just a little bit shorter in duration, you know, when we look at them specifically. So, you know, trying to hit that example one more time, if you did a 90-minute workout in the gym and it was, you know, you totaled up 25 sets. Well, okay, now, and that was in your 20s. So let's say you're in your 50s, it might be a 60-minute workout and you're getting 18 sets and you're going to get that same stimulus.
Right. I like the way that you put it there. It's still going to feel as hard, might just be a little shorter. That's a great snapshot into still getting the intensity for wherever you're at in that moment, just maybe a little less volume or time.
You got to go hard. You got to go hard. Because, yeah, that's the beast, and that's what keeps us vital. And we don't want to shy away from that. I mean, people will shy away from it because they're saying, oh, well, you know, I'm afraid of injury or whatever. That's really just a process of not being not training, using some of the other things we talked about before, personalized, intelligently, being wise with training, because there is a way to use maximum or near maximum intensity strategically, and the benefits are so great, we just don't want to give that up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now the coffee's kicking in. So next up, you know, I talked about finessing both workload and how to do that, and also the magic of recovery.
Well, we've talked about the magic of recovery at length, ad nauseum on the pod, applies to anyone, but I'm curious about how it applies to, you know, particularly training over a lifespan.
Yeah, we want to really look at recovery as being more than just a passage of time. You know, it's a process that occurs in the body, and it's one that we respect and we augment. And so that's really when the gains happen. You know, we rebuild from the stress of training, and so capacity or conditioning is the result of training plus recovery. So even in the fittest among us, recovery ability will decline slightly with age. We can make that fairly incremental. Although, and that's most true in a lifetime athlete who would be using these principles that we are always discussing, so that their body and their metabolisms are staying fairly youthful through this journey. But again, generally, we need a little more time between the fitness maker. So before I said, well, let's keep the intensity in the fitness maker workouts, the purposeful somethings of substance that we have in our training cycles. Well, now I'm saying let's space them out just a tiny bit more. And our bodies tend to become even more sensitive to getting that good sleep and nutrition and having the stress balance. And so by really being aware of how to recover, we can just get more out of what we're doing with our training.
It totally makes sense.
And here's the big message that I'd say with this one. Those fitness makers, they're still happening and they're still necessary. They just show up a little less frequently. And how do I define little less? I mean, I think that's individual, and that's of course where good coaching can come in. But it's especially true regarding competitions, or it should be. You know, we want to test that durable beast from time to time. We just got to make sure it's fresh and ready to do it, and also it has come back enough or fully before we really launch into more big investments. So let's use you as an example, because I know you're an avid cyclist. So let's say PK, he used to hammer interval workouts on his bike 3 times a week in his 20s.
Well, now, let's not say cyclist, let's just say biker.
And whatever, a biker sometimes brings up other images for some of us.
I'm certainly not a cyclist. I'm not in the speed suit. Let's just not give the listeners that picture. That's not it. But I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. And I can hear the straight pipes on your Harley. So now you're in your 40s and you're doing 2 fitness maker workouts a week. And it'll probably be one of those workouts when you're in your 60s. Just guessing on my part.
Yeah, that does make sense. It's as we've talked about a lot here, it's a intellectual and emotional internal conversation, but it does make logical sense. And I think that to get the most out of the vessel that we have at the moment in time we have it, just making that adjustment.
And here's the trap in all this workload and recovery finessing business. It's a lot of people will just fall into the trap of downgrading to middle zone workload. So middle zone intensity, middle zone duration, and then middle zone frequency. So they just do that kind of gray mush training somewhat chronically. And they might just have lost the zest to train like an athlete and, have kind of fallen into these patterns. But what can happen is a person might be exercising for social reasons or thinking mm-hmm. time or just habit formation. I'm going to get out and do my X, get my Y or Z every day. Well, that's fine to some extent, but you're really not training for peak performance if you're doing that. And you might not even be optimizing your health if those patterns are a little too chronic. Beware of the trap.
Yeah, that also absolutely makes sense. So you still got to go hard, and maybe just less frequently.
Yeah, and I think trap rhymes with crap, and that's exactly if you're doing crap training, you're going to get crap results, and that's a trap to fall into, because we've talked about it at length, and we use a yellow designation in our WISE system for that. But enough of workload and recovery. I think people see the picture. Go hard a little less frequently, be smart about that. But then we now start to look at how to leverage these strengths and weaknesses as we go through the lifespan. And I like to break it up into three levels, looking at what we might consider a younger athlete, that's debatable, a middle-aged athlete, and an older or more mature beast.
I love it. Okay, well, let's start with the younger athlete, if we will.
Well, when we look at the younger athlete, let's just say we're talking about age 15 to 30. Let's just say arbitrary. As I talked about quite a bit in my ebook, Animal Fit, which is a body type specific fitness system that allows you to figure out yourself and your gifts, unleash your inner beast, unlock your athletic potential. But we use it in all of our work. I do it with my clients, and it's also going to be a part of my new book that's coming out later this year on training through the lifespan. Well, what we want to do with these young athletes is we want to practice what's called max min with regard to strengths and weaknesses. So we want to maximize strengths and minimize the amount of time we're putting in on known or perceived weaknesses in the young athlete.
Got it.
So what I really mean by that is we're going to work on strengths. We're going to emphasize, hone them, exploit them, because that's really the benefit of youth. And we'll spend the majority of our time and training focusing on them and maxing them out, build those strengths. And they will develop more deeply and be more reliable for us as go-tos through life. But the weaknesses usually, and I say usually, won't be quite as loud at that time when we're young to matter as much. We have that youthful vitality, which can kind of cover over things a bit. So I say, yes, we have to give weaknesses some attention, but only enough attention to preserve baseline health. And I'm not advising this too much, but in the young athlete, you can even ignore your weaknesses and cheat the system a little if you do it temporarily, but not for too long. And then we have to restore those basics from time to time.
Sure. And that's just, that's great insight and self-awareness for the person, but also coach's awareness of the athlete and where they're at on their journey.
Yeah. We're always trying to balance, you know, that whole idea of performance and health. And my view on it is there is a way to do this. We don't have to make, life impacting sacrifices to any great degree. I'll get some argument from that, but you know, as I explain my models, I think they're justifiable. But anyway, how about an example? Let's use a power lifter. So, you know, the squat, bench, and deadlift, the goal is strength. Everybody knows it. It's pretty clear. You know, you go out on stage, it's one lift. You make it or you don't. Well, powerlifting needs the among the least amounts of movement variability possible in the human and the highest amount of stability.
Right.
And try to make that point would be that the power lifters actually train for stiffness. Stiffness isn't necessarily a bad word, it's just a word, and they have to be stiff to be able to exert maximal force and have less degrees of freedom and risk. And so to be a good power lifter, you have to give up, in most cases, some amount of your body's mobility in certain areas, like hip internal rotation or lumbar flexion or overhead shoulder mobility, among others. This actually makes a lifter stronger in the groove, and it requires less of their muscular energy to create stability because the stiffness is doing it, so they can use more of that muscular power for the lift. And I think that's really an important thing to look at, how, you know, when we balance training for any athlete, that we're aware of this. We want to do things that make them better at their sport, but also we want to, just keep an eye on what we're doing with that so that we don't compromise their long-term orthopedic or systemic health. And so the last point, I know I'm really coffeeed up right now. If a person does that for decades, in other words, trains for stiffness and ignores mobility, they become an outlier on the mobility stability continuum. Now we have a problem because we're increasing loading in non genetically appropriate ways for too long. And that's where in this population, if they do that and they don't fix things from time to time, we see a high proportion of joint replacements. So it's a fine line, but it can be managed.
Right. And I think that, again, it's eyes wide open to what the ultimate performance goal is without taking completely your eyes off of the health and wellness. So that absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. And that's where it's such an artful dance from person to person. We've got to figure out how can we get their best performances and just make sure that this machine, this beast that they're living in, is going to function overall relatively well and last.
Absolutely.
So how about middle age?
Why wouldn't we? So we're talking, that would be the next, that'd be, what's the kind of age range, age in quotes that we're talking about here?
I don't know. I mean, you know, because, you know, people think of middle age in different ways, but let's just say it's 35 to 60. That those determinants are quite blurry and they're certainly not precise. But if you got someone who qualifies themselves as being, well, I'm a middle-aged athlete. Okay, that's good. You're an athlete. That's the most important thing. Middle-aged, not so much. Now it's time for mod, like the mod squad of the 70s, not. But really, we're talking about moderate. In other words, a moderate emphasis on strengths and a moderate emphasis on weakness.
Got it.
And here's why. We can back off slightly on our strengths because they now have two decades of development that we've been putting into them. But the weaknesses will begin to require or possibly demand more attention. So this is where the forward-thinking and well-coached, might I say, athlete begins to shine. He'll make a few adjustments and start to reap the rewards of good overall human function. Those who can't change because they don't always feel it yet, or their routine has become a rut-tine, they lose their O, they lose the O in routine, so it's a rut, they're headed for trouble because those weaknesses are going to start to build up and chip away and nip at the hamstrings and Achilles, just saying that figuratively, of the beast, and they're gnawing on it. And we want to kind of tip those scales a little bit and say, okay, strengths are pretty good. We're going to still work strengths moderately, but we don't have to be so strength focused. But how about spending a little more time and attention on these other issues?
So do you think, especially for an athlete who has been focusing on what they're good at, where their strengths lie, for a long time, is it difficult to shift to something that you're not as good at? Is this sort of, you know, I mean, it makes logical sense, but is it difficult to make that evolution when you hit this sort of this middle range?
Yeah, it is. Sometimes the changes are subtle and, you know, the training patterns are quite ingrained and, you know, things are still working for the most part. And so a person's not always aware of this or willing to make some alterations in their training patterns. And I should back up for a moment. I mean, we've talked about just recently on the show, you know, about like what strengths and weaknesses really are. And I certainly have had some things in the master classes on that and then also on the YouTube channel. So if you'd like to check out a short, quick video, which helps you to learn about some of those things, by all means. But we're talking about capacities here, and that's endurance, strength, speed, power, and agility. And so that's what we're talking about. No matter what your sport is, like that power lifter, okay, strength is really what we were into quite a bit. And then if I use a distance runner example, that's endurance. And so that would be, you know, that area of major emphasis, especially in the young athlete. But let's say we've got this distance runner who kind of like, as you alluded to in your suggestion, only runs, only does that one thing. It's the sport. It's what he loves and, you know, just, you know, does that. Has high aerobic fitness, but begins to gradually develop some weakness and some stiffness in basic movement patterns. It might also affect gait mechanics, tissue quality. Well, now what we have is this beast where a quick slip or a high effort. So you're out running, let's say, and it's an icy day, you know, take a little a quick slip, a slide as you make a foot strike, or it's a high effort, you know, maybe there's a car or a dog coming out of nowhere, you got to turn on the jets pretty quick. Well, you come up against no degrees of freedom in either mobility, range of motion, or like having the ability to recruit your type 2 muscle fibers and have a protective contraction. So what happens is usually there's a rip or a tear, and that can become a chronic problem. And man, I have seen this hundreds of times across athletes, but particularly in the motivated middle-aged runner. What's that? MMR. Or this, let's say the opposite happens. This cat wises up. He cuts back a small amount on his mileage and spends a little more time in the gym, shoring up those weaknesses. Pure friggin' gold, man. I mean, he keeps running pain-free and high-performing because he is shored up. He has shored up his deficiencies and he's optimized how his system's working, at least given his body and goals and where he's at in life. I just had a conversation about that the other day with a client. We're doing a coaching call, and I think I actually won him over and convinced him that this is what the journey that he has to do. You know, kind of a chronic runner, still has loves running, has running goals, but stuff's falling apart so much he doesn't get to run that much because he's always injured and in pain. And I said, you know what? There is an answer, and it's just using some intelligent training, and I think we're going to solve some problems for this fellow.
Oh, we'll have to check back in on that at a later date. Make sure to circle back to that, because it, again, it does make sense, but it's also, you can see how it'd be so challenging. Something that you love to do, perhaps need to do as part of how you approach life, in addition to the goals that you have as an athlete. And shifting gears, change, we know, is difficult regardless of where it fits into our lives. But in particular, if our identity is one thing as an athlete and a kind of athlete, it can be tough.
Yeah, and it blends perfectly into trying to say, well, finally, whatever you consider a mature or older athlete, let's say 60 plus or 62 infinity. Now we get that what you were talking about there becoming, scenario becoming even more prominent. And in training, now it's time for min max, which is putting a minimum amount of investment on strengths in order to keep doing these things you love, but a maximum amount of time and energy on keeping those weaknesses at bay.
Right. Do you find that this is a natural progression when you see these athletes shift into this, whatever we can consider this zone is at the high end of the scale?
It's a natural need, and rarely is it a progression. I mean, most people just tend to really fight and resist change. And especially when it's, as you indicated, something they've done for a long time, had success with, loved. So I have to be kind and gentle with them most of the time before they let me be direct. But believe it or not, your strength is your strength. It's probably driven by genetics, of course. But you've been honing it your whole life. It ain't going away. It's built up to the highest degree. If you're 60 years old and you've been running since you were a teenager, he's just using that example, you can relax on it a bit. Your endurance will not degrade appreciably. Take a little bit of time off and then you come back and you can polish it right back up. You got to believe that. I mean, I'm saying that to everyone. You know, we all have to believe that that we can do that, whether you're talking about strength or speed or agility or power, that those things are indeed true.
Well, that makes sense. Now, the idea that you need to do less of what you're good at, that's the tricky part.
Yeah, you almost look at like what you've built over time as a mountain of practice, or you know, application, rehearsal, base, you know, whatever we're talking about, whether it's skills or conditioning. You know, if you've been doing something for 40 years, you're pretty damn well better be good at it. You know, I mean, it's just kind of how it works, whether you're talking about, you know, an application in your occupation or a hobby or anything else. There's something to be said for time invested, not the only thing. But how do we deal with this? Well, you have to realize, for most of us, that as you're going through life, those weaknesses will usually, in the athletic population, start to build and start to grow if they're not being addressed. And that weakness is hungry, I like to say, to bite your beast in the buttock hard. And it's a bummer when it happens. So you need to spend most of your time pulling your body back towards the midline, you know, of functional capacities, and not letting it drift in such a way where, you know, you've got quite a bit of one or two things, but none of the other. And so training almost looks like a reversal of habits and patterns. And again, this is a hard pill to swallow.
Right. But again, it's just a reality.
Yeah, and I like to say, gosh, you know, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to keep it so that you can do what you love and what you're good at. Just we have to rebalance the body a little bit. It still might be biased towards that strength, but you know, by really changing the training to keep the weaknesses well managed, you know, that strength can shine on its own again because it's just been worked on for so darn long. And so sure. Here's an example. We talked about a lifter in terms of training for stiffness and some concerns with that. We talked about a runner who, you know, kind of maybe neglected, you know, mobility and strength and needed to get into that. Well, now let's use a yogi for an example, because this is another one that I've had a lot of experience working with folks. A lifetime of work on mobility in yoga has brought that capacity out to a really high level. And oftentimes the impact of of a 40-year yoga practice on the human body is that we get near outlier status in terms of mobility in the hips, the pelvis, and the lower back. So strength is not usually too high in this population. And they end up with a lot of joint shearing and early arthritic change due to their lack of stability. You know, the body tends to wander quite a bit when it shouldn't. And they'll have that, or they'll end up blowing out a lumbar disc lifting a sack of pet food because their ability to manage load went away.
Well, so this is an interesting example, because as we've talked about at length here as well previously, yoga is a practice. And so if you've been doing it for several decades and you've reached this sort of the twilight of your athletic journey, saying less yoga, more weights, I mean, I know you're not saying those words, but if that's what you're conveying, that could just be a necessary, but you can see how difficult that would be to, you know, put that into, especially if the yoga is holistically a practice for your, your holistic well-being as a human, emotionally and intellectually, in addition to athletically.
It's an interesting thing because, you know, yoga certainly has multiple benefits and you know, we're lifestyle and there, you know, any exercise practice will have contributions in the other categories. But, you know, yoga is supposed to be all about peace. But most of these yogis, they fight pretty hard. They're pretty adversarial in wanting to defend yoga, that it develops all the strength and endurance that they need. And I'm sorry, that's just not true. You know, you have to work out under load to get stronger. And no matter what kind of flow series you're doing in yoga in a 105 degree room, you're not going to get the same cardiorespiratory training benefits of aerobic and interval training. Just not. And so, you know, there's some come to Jesus moments that will happen with this. And I occasionally get fired, and that's fine. But it's really the toughest scenario when we have to coax a person into change. And I'm not saying now specifically that's the yogi, but just that general dilemma. Old dogs don't like new tricks, and change ain't easy.
Exactly. Especially when you're talking about moving to something that you've avoided because you're good at other stuff. That is indeed a tough pill to swallow.
And we've said this on the show before, but you have to be careful taking your exercise or movement practices and turning them into religions. You know, I mean, that's just heady talk here, but most of the wars in history have been fought over religion, and it can come to that. And so we have to keep things in perspective. And you know, it's hard to believe that what you loved and did for so long is now actually either downright bad for you or requires that you approach your training, and this is the hard part, very scientifically.
Yeah, I think that is a challenge, but let's just talk about what you would say to the yogi, because I think it's not all or nothing here. I think that you would find a path that would be workable for someone who's been doing this.
Exactly. And I like that you said, it's not like we told the lifter not to lift or the runner not to run. We're not going to tell the yogi not to do her practice, but we're going to say this: you can still do your practice, but you might modify the poses to avoid prolonged end range loading, especially if it's in all three planes at once, which stresses those connective tissues. Focus on recruiting more stability and contraction in your postures and movements. So you have to kind of personalize that. And resistance training is going to be necessary. Let's find a way to embrace it. And you know, in addition to yoga, because yoga alone is not going to cut it as far as that resistance business. So maybe we'll just start with body weight, and we're going to, you know, do isometrics and reps with push-ups, squats, pull-ups, whatever that is. But ultimately, I'm biased towards weights. Let's get under some load. Doesn't have to be crazy, and it's not expensive, but let's do that. And then also, let's look at a little bit of interval training in some way, because the benefits of that are unique. You know, we've hit on that many times. You know, the five capacities and their five types of training, each one is somewhat unique, and we need a little bit of that. And so that's what, you know, how I would say it's like, oh, it's a redesign, but it's not a total throw everything out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that seems like a reasonable picture that you painted. And while it, you know, might take some getting used to and certainly some change, that seems like good coaching for this particular theoretical scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I am a zealot. I don't make excuses for that because I care and I want to see people get the most, but we can do that reasonably. And it's always a game of compromise. You know, I had an athlete just the other day, you know, working in her training log and, you know, just kind of going back and forth a little bit about, well, you know, how did the performance go in this workout? Well, what's our long-term goal? You know, how do we shift things to, you know, either adjust the workouts to stay on that path towards the goal, or maybe just say, let's modify that goal a little bit. That's okay too. There's always a way to do this where everyone, feels empowered and their dignity is maintained. And that's critically important in the coaching relationship.
Indeed. Indeed. So if we zoom out, as we often do when we get to the end, what are your big take home messages? What are the nugs, the pearls?
Man, I wish I had stock in Zoom. I mean, we started using Zoom. I started using Zoom several years ago. And of course, well, there's no need to say anything else. Wow. Well, the take me home tonight message is, or this morning in my case, we want to finesse workload and recovery. So in doing that, we still want to train intensely, but we want to have a little bit less duration in some of those. Regarding recovery, we want to do other practices, but we also want to space those fitness makers out a tad more if the body says it's time to do that. We want to understand how to leverage strengths and weaknesses with the max min, mod mod, or min max approaches. And these things are incredibly effective and sound. I'd say a coach can really help you in this case to design body-specific and goal-appropriate training programs. And then I'd come back around and I'd say a physical therapist can help you to identify and address movement issues before they become a problem and even correct some things once they are there.
Yes, indeed.
So this be the finale statement. It's kind of a toot, 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 my horn. And, you know, and I do this because I want to help people. But when your coach, if your coach is a certified strength and conditioning specialist with, let's say, 36 years of experience and a graduate degree in exercise physiology and biomechanics and is a physical therapist, board certified in orthopedics, well, you might have the best of both worlds. And that's a Van Halen song. But that's me. That's Coach Jay-Z. That's what I do. And if you're interested in leveling up your athletic game for life, just hit the coaching menu item at thelifetimeathlete.com and let's partay.
Indeed. Great show, John. And thanks, everyone.
Yeah, and as I salute you, PK, just signing off, I'm going to say there are some hot things happening this summer. Again, another 40-something degree morning out my window here in Montana, but summer's coming. It'll be brief for us. I've got some new themes coming up on the pod, a series of brief practical tip-based shows, a couple of interviews with some authorities in the sports performance world, and a deeper dive into the essential human performance aspect of speed. And I'm not talking about the movie with Keanu Reeves, although, man, John Wick, I love that. Okay, so that's what I've got. Thanks again for being with us today. Until next time, this is PK and Coach Jay-Z signing out from the Lifetime Athlete, where you can achieve peak performance at any age and become hard to kill. We'll be right back.